Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 194 for April 4th, 2009. Coming up in a few minutes, special coverage of Whiskey Live New York. First, let's look at the news. Several new whiskeys to mention this time around. Glendronach will officially unveil its revamped line of single malts this coming week. It's part of the distillery's relaunch under its new ownership. Billy Walker of Ben Riach fame and distillery manager Alan McConaughey have been working on the malts since Ben Riach's ownership group bought the distillery last fall. The regular Glendronach 12-year-old remains unchanged, with malts aged in Pedro Ximenez and Oloroso sherry casks. The 15-year-old is now named the Glendronach Revival and is aged exclusively in Oloroso sherry casks. That's the same for the 18-year-old Glendronach, which now carries the name Allardyce. And finally, the Glendronach 33-year-old, also matured in Oloroso sherry. I've tried that one twice and scored it a 91 in blind tasting during the Malt Maniacs competition and a 95 when I tried a cask sample of it last fall with Billy Walker at Whiskey Live Paris. By the way, Glendronach has also redesigned its packaging and has a new website. There's a link at the WhiskeyCast website. Now, while I'm talking about old whiskeys, Laphroaig has released a new 25-year-old expression in limited release. It's bottled at a cask strength 51.2% ABV, suggested retail $500 a bottle. There's also a new 30-year-old Ardmore. More on that later. I mentioned the Macallan Masters of Photography series of bottlings with the Scottish photographer Rankin several weeks ago. A special subset of that series is now available in Europe at the Gaber Heinemann Lounge in Frankfurt Airport. Just to repeat, the bottles of 30-year-old Macallan feature individual labels with photos created by Rankin at the distillery, and each bottle comes with the matching original Polaroid photo. Just 189 of the 1,000 photos were shot in color. Those are the ones available in Frankfurt. Turning to the bourbon world now, we're a month away from the running of the Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs in Louisville. Woodford Reserve is the official bourbon of the Derby and has just released its annual commemorative bottle. This year's bottle features a painting by artist and retired jockey Tom Chapman. It features two jockeys and their horses racing for the finish line with the twin spires of Churchill Downs in the background. The Derby bottle will be available at retailers in 38 states. Dewar Rattray is releasing several new single-cask bottlings around the world, including a 1996 Laphroaig, 1990 bottlings of Bunahavan and Glenrothes, a 1988 Tomatin, a 1983 Linkwood, and a 1982 Old Pulteney. The bottles are destined for retailers in Europe, Taiwan, and New Zealand as of now. Those are just some of the week's new releases. More coming up in a few minutes, but there is other news to report this week. Diageo is planning to cut about 250 jobs in its Scotch whiskey business. Most of the cuts will come in sales, but the Scotsman reports a number of brand ambassadors in Scotland will also be released. The world's largest whiskey producer wants to save $140 million or so this fiscal year. It's also moving its entire London workforce from expensive central London to the northwest London suburbs. Beam Global and Edrington Group are joining forces once again to handle distribution for their products in 24 markets around the world, including Canada, Russia, China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Norway, Finland, and Denmark. The two companies were part of the old Maxium alliance of four producers that dissolved last fall. Now, there were a few stories you might have heard around Wednesday. Highland Park planning to build a satellite distillery in the South Orkney Islands in Antarctica. Brooke Laddie experimenting with a Buckfast finished whiskey. And for those of you outside Scotland, that would be like aging whiskey in casks that were used for classics like Thunderbird and other favorites of the, to be politically correct now, sobriety-impaired community. Finally, White & Mackay is reputedly coming out with a whiskey-infused aftershave featuring darts champion Phil Taylor. Let's all keep in mind that Wednesday was April 1st, April Fool's Day. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. This coming Friday and Saturday is the Maker's Mark Thoroughbreds and Redheads weekend in Lexington and Loretto, Kentucky. More on that in a few minutes. The U.S. chapter of the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society continues its spring series of tastings on April 16th in Dallas. Federal Wine and Spirits in Boston will host tastings of the James MacArthur and Old Masters whiskeys April 20th and 21st. The Glenlivet holds its first whiskey school of the year starting April 20th at the distillery in Speyside. The Balvenie's Sam Simmons will teach a whiskey blending class at the Astor Center in New York City April 24th. The Kentucky Bourbon Festival's Bardstown Sampler is April 25th. And the Whiskey Fair Limburg is April 25th and 26th in Limburg, Germany. Finally, the Spirit of Speyside Festival starts May 1st and runs through May 10th in and around Dufftown. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com.
This past week was a busy one for whiskey lovers in the U.S. with the Whiskies of the World Expo in San Francisco last Saturday, Whiskey Live New York on Monday night, and Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest Chicago on Wednesday night. I wasn't able to make it to San Francisco or Chicago this year, but Whiskey Live New York provided a few surprises, including the debut of a new blended scotch from Duncan Taylor. Ewan Shand went back into the company's history to come up with the Black Bull 30-year-old.
Let's start at the beginning. Back in 1933, Black Bull was trademarked by George Wilshire & Company, which is an associate company of Duncan Taylor. Duncan Taylor merged with George Wilshire & Company and fell heir to the name, but it sort of lapsed. And I re-trademarked it again about 5 years ago and decided that we would create the Black Bull as a 30-year-old to relaunch the brand, and that's what you see here today. So it's 30 years old, 50% malt, 50% grain, 50% ABV, or as you call it, 100 proof here. It's been matured since Newfell grain, Newfell malt, put into Olorosa casks, Gonzales Baez Olorosa casks, and matured the full duration of 30 years in those casks. Now, the raw constituents, I can tell you that there's, once again, we've got the beautiful Invergordon in there. So that's one little number. There's Macallan, Glenlivet, Bunahavan, Bruichladdy, Beaumont, Capardonnach. Do you want any more?
So what's not in there?
That's about it. I mean, there's anything that's not been mentioned is not worth naming. But it's. I hope you enjoy it. Did you? What did you think?
Very much.
Yeah. Delicious.
Yeah. So well balanced. I mean, I'm really pleased that it's. It came of age, so we decided we're going to get it in a bottle.
What's the distribution pattern going to be on this?
Well, at the moment, we're launching here today at Whiskey Live in New York, and we launch for Europe next week in Denmark. So the European launch will be in Denmark. We'll then probably go across to Japan and do the Far East launch there too. So it's pretty limited. I mean, there's as a 30-year-old, it's going to be limited. When I say limited, I mean we're still talking about 10,000 bottles or so. So it isn't a totally limited edition number, but it's not something we're going to replicate forever, so it could be a little bit of a collector's item. But we are going to relaunch the 12-year-old Black Bull, which is going to be very much an American brand.
Now, what else are you working on as far as the single cask bottlings go? What's coming out now?
We've got a Port Ellen coming out, which should be of interest to a few people. That great blending whiskey, Port Ellen. So we'll get that out soon. We're also doing an Ardbeg, just things that we've never really pushed before. We've got fantastic Capardonnach. You know how much we love Capardonnach at Duncan Taylor, one of the best brands out. And you know that we've launched the Peerless range of 40-year-olds. So we've now got 12 40-year-olds under the Peerless range. We're going to take another 6, so we'll have 18. By July, so it's a range of 18 different 40-year-old whiskies. I'm trying to think what else we've been doing. We're rebranding Rare Old. We're about to take it out in a new style, a new box, just to bring it a little bit more into the, you know, the 21st century. So that rebranding's taking place now. And so if you want to pick up the old style box, then get on to it now. So they'll soon be phased out. We've lots of new launches as well. I mean, there's always something new coming out in the market. So we're looking forward to getting those out.
Now, how's the distillery coming?
Well, the distillery is fine. We received our grants. We received a grant for £500,000 from the regional selective grants. And we're chasing another grant at the moment, which is quite a substantial grant. And hopefully, when all of those come through, we'll be kicking off, because I'm still determined to do it under my own steam without outside investors. But I might have to, in this financial sort of circumstances, I might just have to go down the private investor route. But I've been trying my hardest to stay off getting any sort of outside equity from venture capitalists, because I don't find venture capitalists have the passion for whiskey.
Any chance you might have construction by the end of the year?
We've actually started work. We did some groundworks last week, so the preparatory work started. We've been tidying up the building, getting some of the structures knocked down, and so technically we've started, but it's going at a slow rate and within my sort of small confines of cash. It's not easy.
The Black Bull 30 will probably retail for around $180 U.S., Another 30-year-old to keep an eye out for comes from Ardmore, which is following up on the successful debut of its traditional cask release last year. Simon Brooking explains.
It should be available in the American market in the second half of 2009. It hasn't even made it into the competitions yet, but we have high hopes for it. It's a fantastic 30-year bottled at 51% ABV, really full-bodied, along that Highland, that peated Highland style that Ardmore is so well known for, and it really does not disappoint. We're really excited to bring it to the market. Very limited bottling though, so you need to keep an eye out for it. There's only 1,400 and some bottles that will be available, so a unique bottle, but definitely a must-have for those collectors.
And that's 1,400 worldwide, right?
That's correct. It's a limited bottling. They had a barrel that just yielded some fantastic whiskey. They had a couple of them, and we're really excited about bringing it to the market.
I'll have tasting notes for both the Black Bull and the Ardmore 30 up soon on the WhiskeyCast website. By the way, Simon had what may have been the most unusual whiskey of the night hidden away in one of the fishing boots in the Laphroaig and Ardmore display. Almost all of Laphroaig's malted barley comes from the Port Ellen maltings, which supplies barley to all of the distilleries on Islay. But Laphroaig still uses its own floor maltings for about 5% of its supply, and distillery manager John Campbell has some single malt made exclusively from that barley, aging away in the warehouses. I got to try it. It had the richest, most amazing peat I've ever had in a single malt. Now, speaking of peat, I received an email from WhiskeyCast listener Jim Barrett a couple of weeks ago about measuring peat levels. Here's what he wrote. I managed to secure a bottle of the Ardbeg Supernova, which has a peat level of over 100 parts per million. I'm trying to find comparison information on the Ardbeg 10-year-old, and I've seen things ranging from 25 parts per million up to 50 parts per million. What gives? One source says the barley that goes into the whiskey has a peat level of 50 parts per million plus, while another claims that the finished product is around 25 parts per million. Is there a difference between the peat level at the start of the process and the one at the end? If so, is the Supernova peat level of 100 parts per million the finished product or the level of the malted barley at the start? Well, let's get the answer to Jim's question now from the man who should know, Dr. Bill Lumsden of Glenmorangie and Ardbeg.
The way we tend to describe it in the industry is that we'll measure it in the malted barley. So, for example, if Glenmorangie is 2 ppm phenol, if Laphroaig is 45-50, if Ardbeg is 50-65, that's the level that's actually in the malted barley before we start distilling it.
And then the Supernova is up over 100, right?
It's over 100. It's about 40-45% more than is in the standard 10-year-old Ardbeg. So it's the peatiest whiskey we've ever made.
How do you measure peat levels?
You can use two techniques. You can either do it colorimetrically using wet chemistry. It's a technique called the McFarlane or Indophenol method, which is the way most people do it in the malted barley. Or you can use fancy technology called high-performance liquid chromatography. But HPLC measures everything and gives you a higher level. So when we quote 50 to 65 ppm in the malted barley, that's using the Indophenol method. If we were to do an extract and measure it by HPLC, we would have about 90. And then with Supernova, it's way up over 100.
And Supernova is about to become much more available as of, oh, I'd say maybe, what, about 2 months from today?
Yep, that's the case. We did a limited release to the committee, which sold out in 20 minutes, about 3,000 bottles. But we've got 3,000 cases globally, so you're going to be able to get it a bit more easily.
And then there's the release coming at the end of May at the Fays Isle, right?
Absolutely, yes. That's a different whiskey as well.
What are you releasing?
Well, we're releasing a single cask out there, but, you know, watch this space. We've got, do you remember an expression called Corrie Vrecken?
Of course.
Well, Corrie Vrecken is making a dramatic comeback as an ongoing part of the range. I'll get shot for telling you this.
How so? How is it coming back, and what are the details? Since you've already spilled the beans, you might as well tell me the whole story.
Okay. When I first did Corrie Vrecken, the key in there was some Ardbeg spirit that I'd matured in French oak barrels. Barrels which hadn't had wine in them, so it's just the French oak, and they formed the heart of the recipe. And, you know, I kept some back, which is how I'm going to be able to recreate this again. I'm currently working and trying to match the two bottlings. Not easy.
What else are you working on as far as Glenmorangie is concerned, or can you take a break from there for a while now that you've redone the entire range?
I've always got about 20 or 30 or so different experiments on the go. I've got a new Glenmorangie coming out in travel retail called Sonalta, which is extra matured in PX Pedro Jimenez casks. And I've got two or three other little surprises with Glenmorangie. So watch this space over the next 2 to 3 years. You know, we did the Chateau Margaux finish.
Right.
I've got the next one in that series coming out. And, you know, think not necessarily France this time.
Not necessarily France. Let's see, other wine producing regions, Spain, Portugal maybe?
Not either of them, no.
Germany?
No, another big wine producing country in Europe. Arguably the second biggest after France, which is of course Italia.
Okay, come on.
Saying no more, saying no more.
Come on, you can tell me.
Right.
I'm not going to tell anybody, this is just between us, Bill.
Right. You know Italy's top wine, don't you? That's all I'm prepared to say. You'll land me in the soup here.
It's not Spumante, but it starts with S, and that's all I'm allowed to say right now. This coming week is the Masters Golf Tournament, and Augusta National has been featured as part of the Bruichladdy Lynx series. But one course that likely won't be in that series is Pebble Beach, largely because the folks at Lombard Scotch Whiskey have the exclusive rights to use the Pebble Beach name on a whiskey. The 12-year-old Pebble Beach single malt has been on the market for several years, and now the Lombards are bringing out more single cask bottlings. I caught up with Richard Lombard and Margaret Lombard Chipnall.
What's brought the attention of the American market to us really was our agreement with Pebble Beach Company, and obviously the name of over here is renowned with not just world golf, but the setting of the Monterey Peninsula, etc. And our company's been around for 45, 50 years. What we've been doing is laying down fillings of distilleries for many years into the market as brokers initially. But what we did over those 45, 50 years was amass a pretty large stock base of single malts, which time we were trading really as brokers with the major distillers. But during that time, we started to look at bottling our own brands of single malts from our own stocks. And really, Pebble Beach has given us the profile in the American market to come here and show what quality stocks we have. We've got a lot of distilleries in the last 45, 50 years have closed down. We've got a lot of single malts from distilleries that closed down years ago, like Rosebanks and Locksides and Brewers, etc. So we have a pretty quality statement to bring over.
Now, the Pebble Beach is a single malt. The distillery is not named, but What golf course might we find it near if we were to look?
Pebble Beach. I mean, it's the whiskey of Pebble Beach these days. In Scotland, I mean, it's a links course. I mean, I live on the Isle of Man. Every course you play on is links because we're so close to the sea. So,
I just wanted to have a little fun with that. What are you coming out with next? Because you got the T&H out, you've got the Pebble Beach single malt, mm-hmm. you've got the Gold Label blend. What else are you working on?
Well, we have actually here in the American market today, we have available Springbank 65, Glen Grant 64. We have a Brora from the Claude Series, Rosebank, Capadonic, Lockside. In Lockside, we've got a lot of stocks off. So various series of clues which are world-class, you know, rated at the moment. I've got a Sherrywood 28, 30-year-old Bernhavens.
And this really goes back to that heritage you had with the family of buying up these old casks when they were new and hanging on to them.
Yeah, exactly. What our company does is that we take what's called new fill, you know, new distillation. So we've been holding on the whiskies since the whiskies were distilled for our company 45 years ago. So we take control over the maturation process from day of distillation.
When will these whiskies be hitting the market?
Well, actually, a lot of the stock is here now in the American market. We have it warehoused with Western Carriers over in New Jersey. And what we're utilizing now is our brokerage network through VG Wine Spirits and trying to get distribution, you know, through the different markets.
There are four new ones coming out this year, one of them being the 1969 Springbank. We also have a 40-year-old Tom and Tool Glenlivet. And there are a couple of others, which the names escape me at the moment, but they will start coming out in June. They're only very small amounts, very, very small amounts of each one, because they're over 40. But nevertheless, there are the first is coming out about June, and the others will be coming out in the autumn.
We are looking at actually taking the Pebble Beach and developing that further. But at the moment, what we're trying to do is get some feedback into the American market. We're getting really good distribution in the states we're in, and we're now looking to see what's the best way of working the markets where we are and how we're going to build it. But I think obviously the obvious indicators to see how we're going to go with Pearl Beach and develop that for the American market.
By the way, the Lombard Gold Label blend has a suggested retail in the low $20 range, but it tastes like much more expensive blends. It's a good bargain if you see it at your local retailer. It's been 3 years now since Michael Collins Irish Whiskey hit the market, and it's benefited from the sharp growth in Irish whiskey sales. The whiskey was named for one of the leaders in the Irish independence movement nearly a century ago. It's distilled at Cooley Distillery for the U.S.-based Sidney Frank Importing Company, where Abigail Hendren is the brand manager.
We're really pleased with how things are going. We think that the more people who discover Michael Collins, especially at events like this, and get the opportunity to taste it, really see what a great product is and how it's quite different from other Irish whiskies that they've tasted before.
And how different is it from other Irish whiskies? Because you have both the single malt and the blend.
Correct. So if you look at the three distilleries in Ireland, we're just the only one that double distills everything. So our blend is a blend of malted barley and a blend of maize whiskey. So our flavor base, for starters, is different. And then we age everything in bourbon. But I think it's really the double distillation that sets us primarily apart.
And where other Irish distilleries use triple distillation, the double distillation leaves more flavor behind, in theory.
I truly think it leaves more flavor and gives more of a style, more of a defined style to the product.
How many states are you in now?
All states. We sell in all of the United States and in Ireland. That's it.
I know that originally it wasn't going to Ireland, but the Irish folks made a demand for it and actually demanded that it be sold in Ireland.
Correct. How do you know this? But yeah, no, that's true. So I just actually came back from Ireland. So we are in major metropolitan areas within Ireland and also in the duty-free.
Any plans to expand the brand?
Not at this point. Not at this point. We've had a lot of interest from Canada, but really we don't have enough product and we don't have the infrastructure set up to sell in Canada at this point. But if we do expand, that would be the next place.
If you'd like to know more about Michael Collins, check the WhiskeyCast archives for my interview with Cooley's John Teeling way back in episode 28 from March of 2006. Now, it's not only Irish whiskey that's booming. Bourbon sales are growing around the world as more people discover America's native spirit. Maker's Mark Master Distiller Kevin Smith is working on boosting supply
to meet the demand.
What we're seeing, Mark, is a new discovery that's happening not just in Japan and Australia, where we've seen it for years, but we're now seeing it more in Europe. The UK market is really emerging, and I attribute a lot to just the whole overall growth phase of bourbon, and makers being distinctive and different has really helped kind of come into those markets that were traditionally Scotch markets. So, yeah, we're excited about it.
How's the distillery expansion coming? You got approval for it yet?
Well, we've actually got it on approval, but we're moving slowly with it. We've expanded and we've got all the infrastructure done. The lake is expanded. We've got the anaerobic digester so we can process and deal with the spent grains. And so we're just getting ready for the next phase, which will be building the building part of it to put in the new still, which we already have. Just not erected yet, and then the mash tub. So it's coming along. We're just going to move slowly with it.
Now, you're getting ready for your first Redheads and Thoroughbreds weekend as master distiller. This is going to be a fun one, isn't it?
It is going to be a fun one. I expect it to be as fun as all the others. Probably it's going to require me to be there a little bit longer to be there when I was normally back at the distillery getting everything ready for Ambassador Days on Saturday. So I'm looking forward to it. And, again, we have the party on Friday night. We've got the race that day, the Maker's Mark Mile. Of course, the early morning bottle signing with Bill and the folks from the University of Kentucky School of Music and more importantly, Rich Brooks and Nick Nicholson and the team from Keeneland. And then we've got the day at the distillery at Saturday. So it'll be another fun weekend.
Tell me about this year's bottle for Keeneland.
This year's bottle is got Rich Brooks, who's the football coach for the University of Kentucky on the front. And it's a great bottle. It's all white, and it's got a color picture of Rich on the front doing his X's and O's that he's kind of noted for being such the strategic mind and performing such great offensive plays that they've had this past year. In addition to that, the School of Music is doing a big program around the state to try and bring the orchestra and the culture and the things that are tied to that to the state, to the elementary schools, to the regional communities, to the high schools. And so all of the proceeds from this bottle are going to go to the School of Music to help with that endowment.
Do you have your wrist ready for bottle signing day yet?
Well, fortunately for me, I'm still in the shadows where I kind of like to be. His name is going to be signed on there. I'm fortunately going to be in the background just making sure he's got enough pens. So I don't mind that at all. You know, it's kind of the hired gun of the family to make sure I don't screw up the whiskey, keep making it the same way we always have. I'm proud to just be in the background. Let Bill get all the credit. Who deserves it?
They'll go through dozens of pens during that bottle signing. Maker's Mark lovers start camping out at Keeneland the day before to line up for the 6 a.m. start time. It wasn't just a night of whiskey Monday night. Jason McClellan and the guys from the Old Burnside Brewing Company in Connecticut brought their Scottish-inspired beers down to New York City.
We use all traditional methods, all natural ingredients. We don't filter or pasteurize any of our products. Our flagship is 10 Penny Ale. It's a lighter Scottish-style ale. We make a Dirty Penny Ale, which is a pre-mixed black and tan. We take the 10 Penny, we mix it with a California-style stout. Our Pennywise is what we like to call a Belgian Scottish wit. Instead of using traditional Belgian wit ingredients, we use heather tips that we import from Scotland, along with some oranges. And then we make a 10 Penny Reserve, which is our high-end beer. It's a Scotch wee heavy. It's about 10% alcohol, ages out really well. A lot of nice whiskey notes in it from the malts that we use. We don't use traditional English hops in them. It just we find the flavors of the American hops add a little bit more to the product.
Where are your beers available?
Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Vermont, Maine, upstate New York. We're in discussions for New York City.
I'm going to let you in on a secret here. Most of the longtime brand ambassadors who travel to the various festivals around the world don't relax with a dram after the show. The first thing they go for is a cold beer, just for a change of pace. This was the first Whiskey Live event of the year in North America, and for the last 3 years, the only other one was in Toronto each October. This year, that's changing. Gordon Dundas of Whiskey Magazine is working on several more events in the U.S. this year.
It's only having spoken to all the brands that there's plenty more other cities that that Whiskey Lives and big whiskey festivals should be in. And, you know, it's in response to that that obviously L.A. is a huge whiskey market and Florida, Fort Lauderdale as well. What's interesting with the Fort Lauderdale show is we're doing it on the opening night of the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show. So there's a reason for doing it there at that time.
And you're also doing something interesting with the boats in Newport and also in Annapolis, right?
Yeah, well, again, you know, what we wanted to do was to try and provide a platform for brands on a much smaller scale than a standard Whiskey Live to go to have a presence at a boat show without having to spend a large sponsorship deal to be the sole whiskey. So what we do is we provide space for 6 to 8 brands to show their wares in an environment and the type of clientele they're looking to get to.
Is it a possibility that we're actually getting to too many shows, or is there still room for more?
Well, I think what we have to be aware of is that, you know, whiskey companies' budgets are not in particularly at the moment, and that is something that we are very aware of, and we work hard to try and do a deal across all the things, of course, but certainly that's something we're well aware of, and it's not as if, you know, we're going to increase them at an exponential rate, but our challenge is we have requests for shows worldwide in Romania and Russia, and, you know, but we have to be selective and think about and discuss it with the brands as well.
And you're also doing China this year too, right?
We're doing Shanghai in May and Taipei, which is obviously a lot more mature whiskey market, in the end of May. But Shanghai will be interesting. We're working with a local partner over there who knows the market. And it's going to be a very, 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 very interesting show, because we've also opened up in India as well. So, you know, we did India in January. Unfortunately, not the best timing with what had been going on in India just pre-Christmas, but certainly, you know, India, another interesting market. So, yeah, it's quite busy.
The next one of the mini Whiskey Live events will be in June during the Texas Highland Games and Scottish Festival in Arlington, and the rest of the year's schedule is available on the calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. Finally, there's another event this weekend that I'd like to mention. My family does volunteer work with the Alzheimer's Association Philadelphia chapter, and this weekend is the association's annual Chocolate Symphony fundraiser. I'd like to give a special thanks to Rob Samuels and the folks at Maker's Mark for donating a VIP distillery tour again this year, and to Pat McCarthy and his colleagues at Bayway's World of Liquors in Elizabeth, New Jersey, for their generous support as well. Also, an update on Beer Hunter Whiskey Chaser, the book honoring the late Michael Jackson. Amazon.com is still not accepting orders for it yet through the WhiskeyCast store, but as soon as it does, I'll update you via the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and my Twitter feed. That's all for this episode of WhiskeyCast. Coming up on the next episode, I'll sit down with Chivas Brothers master blender Colin Scott. You'll find links for all of the distillers and bottlers in this episode, the calendar of events, my tasting notes, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2009. And comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.